one last question on this. Is there any merit in experimenting with Proposal B for a couple of seasons to see how it works?
No.
OTB AM live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
7:30 OTB AM. I know. All week, Kenny this, Kenny that, Kenny the other. You've had it up to the back teeth of Kenny. And that's why I'm delighted to say myself and Owen Shane this morning are joined in studio by none other than Kenny Cunningham. Morning, Kenny.
All right, lads.
What's happening?
I've been working on that one for all week.
Pretty much it's all I did last night.
I sense we are going with that.
I was up until about 1:30 last night. Kenny, what's going on? Great to see you. This for me definitely represents somewhat of a return to normality, seeing you for the first time at table. In the flesh, Kenny, the best part about certainly a year and a half, more.
Year and a half, is it?
How's life?
Yeah, all good.
Yeah?
All good, yeah. Yeah.
You're
forward to a bit of footy this weekend.
Yeah. I imagine you've been watching events in Newcastle with a sympathetic eye for the Newcastle manager.
Well, to be honest with you, my first thought was I'm delighted for the supporters. Because I think it's the kind of everybody's second club, you know, a bit of a cliche, isn't it? Kind of Newcastle generally amongst football people and supporters. There's a lot of feeling for the football club generally, I think.
Mm.
And in terms of where they've been the last few years, you know, kind of is it a big club, isn't, and the struggles they've had in terms of investment to a point into the football club. And people, I think, genuinely like to see the club kind of do well and kind of flourish. People hark back to the Kevin Keegan era, really, wasn't it? I can vaguely remember that, the kind of buzz that was around the football club at that time, the players who came in. Yeah, and it really kind of took off up there. It's a great place to be, I think, when things are going well. So for the supporters themselves, it has been a struggle for some years. I'm pleased for them because there's going to be obvious investment now that's going to come into the football club. You know, they're going to be interested in the potential players who are going to come in, and they will come in. There's going to be some big names coming in there. It's going to be some big wages paid. There's going to be a big commitment from the new owners, I'd imagine, in that respect. So, yeah, I'm pleased for them. They'll be excited, and, yeah, good luck to them.
Some reports coming out of Newcastle this morning that Steve Bruce is going to be replaced. It's not a great shock to anybody. I think he thought it. I think everybody thought it was going to go on. Yourself and Brucey would have you'd have been good mates down the years, Kenny.
No, I wouldn't have been a good mate. I wouldn't have been a good mate to any of your managers, to be honest with you. That's generally the case. It's kind of a professional relationship you have with most of your managers. So, yeah, I think he's in trouble. That's kind of pretty obvious. I'm sure they'll come out. Amanda Staveley, I think, is the kind of face of the kind of consortium who's bought the football club. I'm sure she'll be saying all the right things and assuring the manager. And, you know, there'll be no knee-jerk decisions being made in the immediate future. I'm sure that will be the case over the next kind of weeks and probably a couple of months, Adrian. But you just sense as if you get to that kind of window, maybe Christmas, New Year's, when things settle down a little bit, you wouldn't be surprised then if maybe phone calls are being made, if they're not even being made at the moment, to managers, agents, and maybe potentially things are being lined up for the new year. That's to be fair, that's not necessarily a reflection on maybe Steve Bruce and his...
Well, he's not going to be... If all these unbelievable sums of money are coming into the club, and they are, he's... Everybody, including himself, accepts that he is not going to be the one on the end of the line to Erling Haaland. He might well be onto Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe. That's not going to be... Everybody knows that's not Steve Bruce's gig.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think when you look at it, I think timing a little bit as well. I remember like a year ago looking around the football landscape in terms of managers, and there seemed to be like about half a dozen, some of the top managers out of a job, kind of there for the taking. Pochettino was on gardening leave, wasn't he? Obviously, the previous Juventus manager who's jumped back in now, back into the job.
Allegri,
exactly. Was available. It's probably only Antonio Conte, to be honest with you, mom, which kind of screams at you.
Mm.
And that'd be a very interesting one, because I'm a big fan of Conte, to be honest with you. And I think he's good. He's a great manager on a lot of different levels. I think he's a very good coach. I think he's a very good coach in how he sets up his teams. I think he's a kind of strong personality. And I think one of the reasons why he jumped, obviously, into Milan, he had a couple of great seasons there. I think what he did there was fantastic in such a short period of time. But obviously, word came down the chain that he had to get rid of a few players there. There was no room for further investment in the squad, and he'd had enough. And he's the one for me at the moment, if you're looking at getting somebody in of real kind of stature, not just stature, but kind of real quality. He's the one for me, and it'd be interesting to see, yeah, if any phone calls are made in his direction, to the extent of, look, just sit. Are you prepared to sit for a few months? There could potentially be a job for you here if you're patient enough, maybe in the new year. But yeah, he's certainly one for me who absolutely screams out in terms of about a natural fit, like, you know what I mean, but someone of real top quality.
Chatter about Stevie G, obviously. He might be one of the early favourites, I think, for it. Based on the work that he's doing, obviously, at Rangers, with dealing with that sums of money, you're suddenly at one of the, if not the, richest club in the world. Slightly different kettle of fish, can you, when you're dealing with that level of player and that level of budget?
Yeah, I think you're right. It is an interesting one. Yeah, I've been impressed with the job he's done up there. I've got to be honest with you, it's not as if he went up there, lads, wasn't there, was a huge war chest there available to him.
Yeah, but is that not, like, there's nothing in that then to recommend him almost for this job? Like, he's not used to
but for me it's more important in terms of looking at a manager in terms of what he can do with the squad that he has available to him. Can he tap into the squad and get the very best out of players available to him? If he's good at that, and that means in terms of how you set up your team, the tactical setup of the team, how you deal with the players on a one-to-one basis, you know, can you pull the kind of dressing room together, team environment, all of those things. If you can do that, regardless, you know, the quality of players in the dressing room, for me, that's the most important thing. If you can do that, you can pretty much do it at any level with any type of player. Now, I know big egos come into it, the higher you go up and the players that you bring in, kind of world-class players. But if you have that ability to kind of win the dressing room over and get the very best out of the players you have available to you, for me, that's first and foremost what you're looking for. And I think he's done that, to be fair to my range, well, from afar anyway. I haven't been watching it that closely, but I like the way he speaks. I like the way he's set up his team, and I think he's done a really good job up there for his first managerial post. I think it's a natural fit. I think it's only a matter of time for me when he bounces back to Anfield. That's a given for me. So I think it's I'm interested with Jared in terms of how, first of all, in terms of how Liverpool perceive him, in terms of where they feel he needs to be in his manager career before they'll take him back to Anfield. Is it sufficient for him to park himself in Glasgow, Adrian, for another 2 or 3 years, get more experience, more European experience with Rangers, a couple of more league titles, wherever it is? Will that be sufficient for the owners at Liverpool then to say in 2 or 3 years' time, when invariably Klopp departs, that's sufficient now, that body of work you've done at Glasgow, that's enough now, we'll take you? Or whether they feel, and maybe Gerrard feels, I need to go and bounce from Rangers into another environment, maybe a more demanding environment to an extent, Newcastle, maybe that, and prove myself there and build something there at Newcastle, and maybe then further down the road that'll be his avenue back to Liverpool. I don't know how you two lads see it.
I was going to ask you, like, what do you think is the more likely of those two things? Because to me it does seem that it's the second of those two situations where Gerrard will think maybe he just need one more job just to persuade the hierarchy at Anfield, because he's a level above, I think, at this point where Lampard was before taking Chelsea. But I still think is there a whiff around that sort of ex-player getting appointed still after Lampard at Chelsea? And let's see what happens with Solskjaer at Manchester United and to a certain extent Arteta at Arsenal. You can't really say any of those three have worked out brilliantly yet, that they've all sort of learned on the job. And I wonder, does Gerrard get put into that category now, but doesn't get put in that category if he takes one more job and actually succeeds?
Well, Lampard could have gone to Rangers and done what Stevie G is doing. We just don't know, right? Like, there is a middle ground of, like, on your point, if Gerrard does need to go to an Aston Villa or to another club, doesn't he, really, before, like, Liverpool are not going to, despite his club status as a club legend, surely taking a punt, they'll be taking a major punt. With all due respect, I'd be saying the same if he was managing Celtic.
Yeah, I disagree with you, to be honest with you, for the reasons that I've said. I think a dressing room is a dressing room, and I don't see a huge amount of difference between a dressing room in Newcastle, Aston Villa, or Glasgow Rangers Football Club. Those things that I'm talking about in terms of managerial qualities in terms of man management, how you deal individually with players, with the group itself, the tactical setup of the team, your understanding of the game, how you perceive it, and how you can put a team together and really get the very best of the players you have available to you. I mean, that for me is the absolute key, and I think he's come close to that at Glasgow, and I think he's getting better every year. I think European experience as well will help, and that'll kind of help his development as a manager. I think he's a strong character, Gerard. He seems to have that bit of, you know, whatever it is, belligerence is there, isn't he? You can kind of get a bit of a sense of it. I think the kind of personality traits are there for him to walk into a club like Liverpool and have an impact. And I think there's actually, from his point of view, there's real risk in terms of making a jump to somewhere like Newcastle or somewhere else, for potential for it to go badly wrong. I think he was being a little bit clever. I think for me, it'd probably be better advice to sit where he is and stay on that horse up in Glasgow and see how successful it can be there. And I think for me, that's sufficient. If he continues on his kind of upward trajectory that he's on at Glasgow Rangers, I think for me there's a strong argument there that's enough, that's sufficient for Liverpool. It's always a calculated risk, lads, isn't there, in terms of young managers. You mentioned a few of them there. You talk about Lampard. Well, I wouldn't consider Lampard necessarily a failure. I'm still a big fan of Frank Lampard. I think he can kind of bounce back and still be successful. But yeah, that kind of transfer, that managerial kind of merry-go-round, it'd be interesting kind of going forward, Gerard, Conte and that Newcastle position, because that's a job which every manager will be kind of salivating over.
No, Parity, you haven't mentioned yet the obvious source of the money, and a lot of people with a bad taste in their mouth about all this happening. Not the fans, by the way. I think the Supporters Trust did a survey to say that 94% of Newcastle fans were behind this happening. No, Parity, you is a little bit put off by the source of the money?
Oh, it is. Yeah, you've mentioned it there. It does stick in the gut. I'd have to admit that, and it'd be nice. Look, I've mentioned before about the fans and the club, and I'm delighted for them. That's absolutely the case. But I think you can park that to the side. But there is that kind of elephant in the room, and I think it's important that it gets kind of referenced. You can talk about generally their kind of the country itself and kind of how they operate and how they treat their citizens, maybe women in particular. But I think if anything kind of encapsulates the issues in regards to how the country is run, it was the murder of that Saudi journalist in the Saudi embassy in Turkey. I mean, that was a pretty despicable, disgusting act, and I think that needs to be referenced. Like, you know, I think if anybody who's read it, and I'd be the same as anybody else, a layman just picking up the paper, and I've read as much as anybody else, but pretty kind of sickening what happened there, in terms of how that man was lured into the embassy under false pretenses and treated the way he was. So I have a huge amount of sympathy for his family. I think it was his fiancée at the time. He was actually going there, wasn't he, to get papers so he could actually marry his fiancée at the time. And she's walking around. She's obviously trying to fight his case. And you hear quotes for her obviously trying to keep the case in the public kind of spotlight. But not too many people, I don't think, are interested in listening. We won't hear too much of it over the coming weeks in relation to the Newcastle story, but I think it's important that it is kind of referenced, and it's people are made aware of it, and I think it'd be nice to see some kind of acknowledgement somewhere, whether it's the Premier League or somewhere else. I think that
ship has sailed now, almost, hasn't it? Because that was the opportunity the Premier League had to say, we don't want to be associated with this regime. And you mentioned that one story there, and it's not an outlier by any stretch of the imagination. You only have to do a very quick Google to figure out that there's plenty of those types of stories about. Mm. How do we square all this off, right? Because, like, we've just spent 15 minutes talking about what's going to happen on the pitch, and that's going to be repeated up and down this country and up and down other countries around the UK and further afield ad infinitum now, right? For as long as this the Saudis are involved in the club, it's going to move on from conversations around this. It's going to move into a football context. Sports washing, as been mentioned on this show during the week, works. It's difficult to know exactly how we manage all this when we're previewing Newcastle against Aston Villa or previewing Newcastle against Leeds. This stuff just doesn't come up, and suddenly we're talking about all of this in a very positive light.
Yeah, no, it's true. I don't think we can do anything about it. In all honesty, this is where the game's gone. The amount of investment that's coming into the game over the previous whatever it is, like these kind of billionaires and now state-owned football clubs. It's interesting, really. I think one of the criteria for this takeover getting the green light was the, if I read it correctly, was the fact that the private investment fund from Saudi Arabia was strictly, there was some distance put between that and the actual state itself, as if to say the private investment fund actually existed independently.
Well, it makes no sense, Kenny. It makes no sense. It's 80% of Newcastle is owned by the Saudi State Investment Fund, which is run by Mohammed bin Salman. It makes absolutely no sense at all.
It's almost an admission, the fact that they're trying to create that distance. I know that there are rules about states not being able to own football clubs, and maybe that's the reason, but there's also a washing of the image that's going on here, where it's like they realise that opening up the fact that this is owned by by Saudi Arabia is not a good look, and they're almost very self-aware of what the image is. Like, I mean, the thing is, this is absolutely nothing new. Like, when we look at Paris Saint-Germain or Manchester City, I mean, there is a list as long as your arm, if you want to go through human rights abuses, that are on a par with Saudi Arabia in some respects. And have we forgotten about that? Or when it comes to the biggest moments, do we all of a sudden have these conversations more? And I just wonder, how has that changed over the last couple of years? If you're a glass half full person, you could say that, you know, the last day when it was PSG against Manchester City, there were a couple of pieces written about this being a pretty grotesque representation of where modern football is at. On the other hand, you might say, well, actually, everybody's just talking about Lionel Messi, or everybody's just talking about what's going on at Manchester City. And then the big test is obviously going to be at the end of next year when it comes to the Qatar World Cup, and what sort of blowback there is to the price that's been paid on a human level for putting that show on next year. And you suspect that once the games get underway, that will be very much in the rearview mirror. And I think that'll be crystallised in particular when it comes to, you know, a heavy month of football as opposed to a state owning a football club.
Yeah, and there's obviously been deals done behind the scenes there in terms of Qatar and Saudi Arabia in terms of getting this deal over the line, in terms of like the Premier League stream over the past couple of years, being sports, isn't it, which comes out of Qatar, and there's been issues there with Saudi Arabia in terms of piracy and this and that, and talk of like £1 billion being paid by Saudi Arabia to Qatar to kind of settle that outstanding issue, to kind of smooth the way for this particular takeover. And then, of course, you know, there's a lot of politics in that region anyway, isn't there? There's a proxy war being fought over there anyway, Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Yemen anyway, isn't there? So there's all of that, and I wouldn't want to be sitting here, mate, because I'll be the very same. Like, I'll walk out of this shit out today, and then that'll be the end of it. I'll, you know what I mean? It'll be parked to the back of my head. But I think it's important, these things, they're not going to push under the carpet. Maybe, you know, Saudi Arabia, the Mohammed bin Salman, he won't be speaking directly to the camera, but I think it's important these things are kind of spoken about and they're put out there. And you know, some people are held to account over some of the stuff that we've been talking about today. Is it going to change? Probably not. The nature of the beast now, the money's involved, and the Premier League, where it's going, you feel as if the game's almost been taken away from us to a large degree. I think people will accept that. But yeah, I think it's a pretty sad day, though. I think if people feel unable to bring these issues to the fore and kind of speak about them in public, or you know, you're reprimanded, or you're kind of dismissed, or you feel as if potentially there's some kind of repercussion if you actually speak out about these things, I think that's probably a pretty dark place we're heading for, if that's going to be the case. Like, so we can't change everything overnight, but I think it's important that at least people speak out and these things are put out in the public domain, and people at least are made aware of them. And maybe, lads, you could make the argument, it's a pretty weak one, the fact that Saudi Arabia have taken over Newcastle. Maybe they will be held accountable a little bit more now. Maybe they'll have to face up to a few of these kind of criticism, these questions from people, from journalists, where that may not have been the case previously. So they might have to accept a little bit of responsibility and actually come out publicly and speak and address a few of these things, and maybe in the long term, maybe that might accelerate a little bit of change in some of these countries for the better. Who knows? I mean, it's a pretty weak argument, to be honest.
Well, look at no view. Sure. No, it is a fair point that maybe it has a sort of an about face impact on the source of where this money is coming from. But it is definitely hard to see. Like, you listen to, there was a podcast that was republished again during the week from The Guardian from last year, where a woman whose sister had been imprisoned in the state for basically nothing, including something to do with driving. But she was an activist and she was a voice for women's rights in the country. And she'd been sexually abused after being arrested for no reason. And she was electrocuted. And her sister spoke about the police state nature of the country and no freedom of speech. And then you hear Amanda Staveley yesterday and she's talking about they're going to do great things for the community in Newcastle. And look, they probably will. But bloody hell, it's just grim. And it ain't going anywhere, and I think it's probably important that we continue to have the conversation. And like Owen says, around the bigger games, because Newcastle are going to be, if this all plays out exactly the way they plan it, they're going to be contending sooner rather than later for Premier League titles and for Champions League titles and all that, the rest of that stuff. So it's important that we continue to have that conversation. Owen, you were going to say something there, were you?
Well, I'm just going to make the point that Manchester City have done that exact thing that Amanda Staveley is promising for Newcastle, that by all accounts the community around Manchester City have actually benefited quite a bit from the financial investment. But that is also part of the sport washing. These people aren't stupid. They know that the community matters when it comes to these football clubs, particularly in the north of England. And investing in the community is just a genius way of helping tap into the sports washing idea. Like, I would say that really, when you compare it to, say, Manchester United, like, they're not that they're in it for sports washing whatsoever, they're in it for a financial gain, it seems. And it, you can just see it's chalk and cheese when it comes to how the fans look at their ownership. Like, I would say Manchester City are delighted with their owners. Mm-hmm. Newcastle United, the first signs, they're delighted with their new owners. And I don't think that'll change over the years. Whereas it was interesting yesterday in the paper that you had that little sidebar of the Glazers taking out more money from Manchester United. And beside the story of the Saudi takeover at Newcastle. And you ask yourself, which of these fan groups is going to be more annoyed with their ownership? Is it going to be the one that is connected to human rights atrocities, or is it going to be the one that is connected to grotesque capitalists? And it's obviously going to be the second one. And that is the grim reality of where football is at the moment, and investing in the local community in Newcastle. I mean, it is just all part of the image. We are pushing forward this narrative that we're actually okay, you know?
Mm. It's a topic we're definitely going to come back to over the course of the morning as well. You are watching OTB AM. Delighted to have you along with us this morning. It is 7 minutes to eight on this Friday morning and lots of comments coming into us. Do keep them coming over the next little while you're watching OTB AM. Brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Here's what's coming up between now and 10 a.m. this morning. We're going to continue our chat with Kenny in just a couple of moments. So I'm going to talk a little bit of Ireland as well. The GPA have been out and had their say on whether it's Plan A or Plan B they're backing, and it's very firmly in Plan B, and some questions for the GEA as well arising from that yesterday. Owen was at the press conference and will bring us all the reaction from that just after 8 this morning. 8:30, we'll let you know what's happening across the back pages this morning. Sports news, Will O'Callaghan joining us at 8:40. Alan Quinlan talks all things rugby at 8:50. We've a very special live crappy quiz with three great football men coming your way at 9:10. And then Tom Parsons, who was on the show with Nathan last night at 9:30. Kenny, you're pumped for the crappy quiz this morning, I believe.
I am hoping Owen's put in the due diligence on this occasion, which was severely lacking the last time I...
It's always severely lacking.
Yeah, today
is not
that's
that
the only commentary.
Today's the one day it's not lacking.
I thought the criticism the last time I would actually hurt. I thought I got underneath Owen's skin last time. I sensed the reaction last time. The barrage of criticism which came his way, so...
Why wouldn't it get under my skin?
You know they've rolled out the big dogs for this one, Kenny.
Is that right?
It's you versus me.
I got my old Trivia Pursuit board out last night. I was swapping up in a few questions, only to be told it's purely sports related. I thought it was more of a...
You could have Trivial Pursuit?
A broad spectrum of questions.
What would your specialist topic on Trivial Pursuit be?
Ah, well... now, sport and leisure, wasn't it? But I would say sport, but there was always that one leisure question in there which tricked you up, didn't it? So it was a little... Oh, was it geography maybe, to be honest with you?
I love geography, I must say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was always... Yeah, that initial couple of years in geography in school I loved. You know that? The map of the world aging, capital cities, rivers and mountains. Any type of that kind of very basic, clearly.
Yeah.
I was your man. Once geography started going into the realm of, precipitation, that's it. Mm-hmm. Clouds, how do clouds form?
That's science, like thing. Like, we all, like, I mean, it's nonsense that
Forget
ever categorised.
Forget it.
Oh, you'd be a history man, too, would you?
History, geography, the two. But, like, I mean, Kenny, I mean, I'm sure that you get that same rush of, you know, what is the capital of Georgia? And when they turn over that card in Trivial Pursuit, and you're like, Tbilisi, play there, mate. And I would say that you on Christmas Day are just like, play there. played there, and everybody's like, how can we compete with this? This guy's played in every backwater in the entirety of Europe, and he knows all these cities.
Like, badly in every backwater, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't go that far, to be honest. I haven't got that many caps on, in all honesty, but yeah, I did enjoy the game. It was a Christmas game. Is that people still... I remember people traditionally used every Christmas, but wherever it was, Stephen's Day, there was a designated time whoosh to get around and have the trip. So it wasn't there.
Yeah.
Almost religiously.
I don't think it happens anymore, does it?
It's
does it?
Yeah, it does in our house. I mean, what are you doing, like, watching?
Right, what else are you doing in Fireys, I suppose, is probably the question there. There's literally Trivial Pursuit board.
And they got heated.
Head up to look at the planes coming in at Farm 4, and that's kind of it.
Like, oh, it's bad. Went off on a tangent there.
Yeah, that's a horrible thing to say.
Kenny, I was in Fireys. I can say this.
I gladly jump on a plane to Farm 4.
Thank you, Kenny.
Well, you would, and then...
Even in the scales.
You'd be even happier to jump on it to get the hell out of there.
What do people even do on Christmas Day around Europe? Like, are they going out?
Where's that come from?
Yeah, people go out. People go out to do all sorts. They jump in the water. They do all kinds of things. But I just don't know. The board game thing seems to have, in modern society, Fireys notwithstanding, seems to have, I don't know, become a thing of the past.
Disagree.
Somebody's pointed out here on YouTube, which just sort of bypassed me as we all sat around the table here to gather for this morning show, that Will says Kenny and Shehan's tops are exactly the same colour, which I hadn't appreciated at all, lads. That's unbelievable colour coordination.
Send an SMS.
Oh, you mean?
Yeah, Shehan is.
Are we not on first name terms?
This is what I thought.
I'm just reading out what Will has sent.
You wouldn't call him.
He's got a shirt. That's a green shirt. This is a hoodie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Same colour, fair enough.
Basically the same colour. It's fair play to you.
It's hardly like a million to one shot, is it?
We're getting ready for a hard weekend camouflaging ourselves for the army, Kenny. That's what we're at. Bit of paintball.
What else? We've got loads of comments coming in here. Happy Friday, lads. Always entertaining with King Kenny, says Stephen Fraser. Good morning to you, Stephen. Kevin O'Reilly. Everyone questioning the new owners of Newcastle and all the sports washing talk. Should the British government sell arms to the Saudis? Owners of Man City, PSG and Chelsea all got a pass. Real world. And I definitely think there's an element of that we'll see unfolding over the next few years. I'm a Newcastle fan, says Stephen McNamara here. Against this takeover, Yemen, Khashoggi, etc. Shameful. I'm also no fan of Bruce, but he's told... what's happening soon, unfair on him to mess him about. Well, it looks, Stephen, as if that's what's going to happen this morning. Would any amount of money, this is a really good question from Shifty Lad here, any amount of money get the best players to play in the cold north of England?
Well, they got Tino Sprilla to turn up on the plane. Do you remember that picture of him getting off the plane? Newcastle Airport, the kind of snow was coming down. He had that big sheepskin on, didn't he, around the shoulders?
Like, is it? I mean, you've played in both places, Kenny. Is Newcastle that much colder than Manchester?
What I will say, I had a year up there, obviously. Sunderland supporters, they might be crying this morning thinking, why are they taking over Air Football Club? I think it's an argument. That's a sleeping joint up there as well. Sunderland, I'm very surprised that big investment hasn't come in to that football club, I'd add, considering their kind of support base. But no, I had like 9 months up there, lads, and I'll be honest with you, I loved it. It's a great part of the
footballers
world.
Don't
great
live
people.
Up in Newcastle or Sunderland, right? They live in Durham or...
Well, they don't live on Newcastle High Street. They don't pitch a tent in Newcastle, no, but they live in the surrounding areas, like suburbia,
like
around
a nice village.
Same as every town. You can make that argument for every town. Agent, to be honest with you, I think that's a pretty weak one. Like, no, they do. It's not as if they, it's not as if they're kind of, West London and, private aircraft up every day. They're in the surrounding area, some beautiful villages around Sunderland, Newcastle.
Who was it?
I don't remember who I was, to be honest with you, there. I was up in.
Where did you live?
I was in Durham.
Durham? See, they all live in Durham. That's what
I was in with the students. I'll be honest with you, I was there about 3 months. I've got to be honest. I don't think I saw one football top. During the first months I was there, a massive student population there. It's kind of it's a beautiful little town, to be honest. It's only a stone's throw from this city centre, but it's a great place to live. It's beautiful. I mean, you're talking about, why would you go up there? I mean, why wouldn't you? If you spent a bit of time up there in Northumberland, looking at your face there, Ed, you clearly haven't, like the blank expression. You'd rather talk about Farnham Fire and criticise. Owen in that part of Ireland, but no, it's gorgeous. The Dales, Moors up there, it's absolutely breathtaking. The people themselves, the people are great.
Yeah, but sure, the lads aren't going up there for the beautiful scenery. And who was it?
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Quality of life, Adrian. It's why people are going and coming back out with Kerry. They've gone down there on their Zoom calls and not coming back to Dublin.
Right. Who was it that didn't want to move
away back
from
in love with the land?
Who was it
right
that,
on?
That,
exactly,
that either moved to Tottenham or didn't want to move away from Tottenham because their wife wanted cinema tickets? What was that? Remember that years ago?
Somebody telling me there's no cinemas up in the north. No, you're going to make an argument now.
The point was more that they wanted to be living in cosmopolitan London rather than the back end of nowhere. I mean, with all due respect.
Yeah, but I think you're making I think that's probably the case in one or two situations. But if you're going up there, I'd suggest if you're going up there as a family, like young kids and stuff, and you're looking for a nice. Good environment for the kids to grow up. I don't think there's a better place in the UK, in all honesty. So, but as I think you're right, money talks, the kind of contracts they're going to be throwing around, the wages they're going to be throwing at players. I think by and large, players will suck it up.
We'll talk in a bit more detail about Ireland. We've only a few minutes here, but I have gone from a place of, I'm actually quite excited when Ireland games are upcoming out. Now, I get less excited often once they begin, or maybe more to the point once they end, and we haven't ground out the result. But just with the young players that are there, the quality that admittedly needs to be, they're sort of rough diamonds, I suppose, at the minute. But I am a little bit excited. I do get excited about the Ireland games when they come around now. Are you in the same boat, or how are you feeling?
Yeah, well, I always have been, to be honest with you. I don't remember too many occasions since I finished playing. The games haven't come around, and there is that little bit of buzz. I really do look forward to the games. And in all circumstances, teams, you know, playing well, not playing well, going through a bit of a trough or playing well, it's still the same for me. When kind of gets to the day before and the hours leading up to the game, there's always a bit of a buzz of excitement and expectancy, yeah.
And is that specific to this group right now, or how are you feeling about it?
No, generally speaking. Yeah, generally speaking, it's nice to, you know, it's nice to watch the team play, even to get down to the stadium occasionally, which I do. It's not the same. It's not Lansdowne anymore. Thank God, say the two lads.
But yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's different for me. That was pretty unique. I miss it. I've got to be honest with you. And funny enough, I got a WhatsApp message from somebody, and they had a little picture on the top, that little picture people put on their
profile pic,
WhatsApp things, and it was a side view of the old Lansdowne stand where the train goes underneath behind it. It was just shot a little bit back, and it was kind of magical. I hadn't seen a picture for such a long time.
Would you be a big WhatsApp man, Kenny? I never would have had you down for WhatsApp.
No, I am. I'm not. I do a little bit now, to be honest. The Youngfless set it up for me a year or two ago. And then once you're up, then people start bouncing stuff off you. You can't control it. Once they're in, it's like a little worm, isn't it, in your computer or something like that. Once you're set up, then you start receiving air. I think
from
it
who?
Is good.
Who
no, I think it's good. No, I wouldn't. I would have texted people prior to that. So what I like about the WhatsApp is that the pictures, it's
memes.
The kids can say
emojis. What are we talking about here?
No, pictures like
viral photos. You know,
some lads will say, if there's something like an article or something, they can send you like a picture or a screenshot, and it comes up quick. Right. You don't have to go independently into the phone to try and send a photo or something or whatever. So it's
all connected.
How did you manage on, was it Monday night, without WhatsApp for a while? Remember it went down on Monday? Did you realise that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was in the house. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have a huge burden. I can get away without it, to be honest with you.
Right. That's impressive.
Owen, come on.
What were we talking about? Lansdowne Road.
Because obviously the dart used to come around the back, and it was funny because there was a couple of, obviously, the Dublin, Stephen Carr was from the same part of Dublin as I was, Carr's kind of Donnymead, who was up in further up in Coolock. And I remember after the game, Carr's would jump on the dart. He'd grab his bag, he'd disappear out of the dressing room, and he'd walk up and grab the dart back home to his parents' house in Coolock. And
mobbed.
Cars, he's in the size of him. Bench is about 120. No, but that was kind of typical of the times a little bit. I'm not saying this was going back to the like 50s, was it? You know what I mean? We're all getting paid and kind of like penny farts and all that type of thing. But yeah, but that was just a little indication of the times. And that picture kind of brought it back. I mean, it looks dilapidated, the stand. Don't get me wrong. You'd look at it now, you think, oh, what a, oh, look at the state of this, blah, blah, blah. But it, you know, different pictures in my head when I think back.
No, but we can look back at it now because it's been redeveloped. And like, if we were still looking at the state of that place now, we'd obviously be have different things to say about it. You, did you start off there by saying you desperately miss it? Was that?
I feel like Kenny wants had a rebuttal on what you just
sure,
said, AJ.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm quite buying into it. Like, so what are you? What, I don't know what you're saying because you can't get your gourmet burger like in the old.
Oh, you're not saying that you love
now. In fairness, he's onto something here.
I'm talking about you, Adrian.
Now, Kenny's onto something here, Adrian. In fairness,
what are we talking about?
What are you talking about?
Let's bring some clarity.
I'll bring clarity to the situation, Kenny. I mean, you're not a Twitter.com user. You don't engage in that. WhatsApp is where you begin and end. And that's
what's up. What's up?
But on Twitter. At whose Adrian Barry account of this gentleman here was at the Aviva Stadium, the old Lansdowne Road, as you might be familiar with, was in the prawn sandwich seats, had a couple of glasses of red and probably white wine as well, went straight to his head over the course of a couple of hours, full-time whistle, Leinster have won the Pro 14, and he tweets a picture of the beautiful new Lansdowne Road, and it's like, is this possibly the greatest team that Ireland have ever produced in any sport ever? The wine gone to his head, the new Aviva Stadium, the prawn sandwich brigade to his head. Leinster Rugby, the greatest Irish team of all time ever.
I'm guessing I'm picturing
for that, like,
I mean,
I'm picturing one of these selfie sticks, Adrian, one of these selfie sticks I've seen with people walking.
Kenny,
that one
you've had a couple of glasses of wine holding a selfie stick out like that is it's a recipe for disaster. But like Kenny, look, this conversation is brought up sort of shoehorned into conversations every 6 months or so.
How is it?
The point absolutely stands though, no? That Leinster.
Well, I don't know what your point is. That is my point. That I Leinster, don't know what your point is.
Leinster are one of the greatest teams that Ireland have ever produced. I think that's. You could certainly have a debate about that. And I mean, I would probably fall down and decide that that's probably true.
The point was more to do with the prawn
sandwich
nature
that.
I appreciate that. Your attachment.
But hang on, you're not saying, Kenny, that you long for the old, cold, grim, grey Lansdowne Road.
I long for the days when we used to walk into that. Changing room underneath Lansdowne Road, hour and a half before the game, and everybody would immediately go to the pile of towels, take their towel off, open it up, and place it on the brick floor immediately in front of where they used to change. So we're covered in an area of about 2 foot by three, and you know, at least that towel area, your feet wouldn't be kind of frozen solid. But by the time that you went onto the football pitch, because it was that cold. Oh my
God.
There's no
heating facilities in there.
Heat facilities, come on, dude. Your coat, you had your coat. That was it. That was the only heating facility. Put your coat on.
Wow.
It was so cold. But that was it. We didn't know anything.
But were you not coming from like great facilities?
No, but that's all part of it. Did anybody enjoy the fact it was freezing? Oh, the showers occasionally wouldn't be hot. Yeah, but yeah, of course not. But it's all part of it. It's all part of the magic, isn't it? And kind of coming out the tunnel, coming out onto the pitch, the noise, different noise, isn't it? Different noise, acoustics are different. Yeah, that stand may not have been. I actually saw a picture, a friend of mine has a picture in it, a puppy's just opened in Balbriggan. Am I ever mentioned it?
Oh, go for it.
Oh, yeah. The central, go up the central. In Balbriggan, and he's got a photo of Paul McGrath. It's like it's a beautiful photo of Paul jumping the head of ball, but the background is the little the little house.
Oh yeah,
the little the little house in the car. Now I used the ball boy.
Wanderers,
like ball
it?
Boy once. Is it Wanderers down? Was it? That side was it?
I think it might have been.
But it used to be like it was just stood alone there, didn't it? It was almost as if the ground was kind of built slowly around that. I think the ball boys used to get changed there. I was ball boy once years. I've forgotten all about it, to be honest with you. One evening, a miserable evening.
For Ireland?
I think I'm actually, if I can barely remember, there's a bit of footage there somewhere, a goalkeeper going to get a ball and, you know, I'm picking up the ball and throwing it to the goalkeeper. Yeah, that picture of Paul majestic, and you look behind and there's this little, people might be looking at it thinking, oh, it's this little house there. That's very highly unusual. But it was highly unusual. That's exactly what it was. Like, it was kind of unique. So all of those things, that picture that it was sent, all those kind of little memories there. So for me, it's magic. And I don't get that. I mean, obviously, I've never played it at the Aviva. I walked around. It's magnificent. It's beautiful. And all of those things looks the business like. But I don't get that buzz. Not the same buzz for me.
I can only imagine a 10-year-old Kenny Cunningham throwing the ball back to the keeper going, "All right, listen, keep it tight in the back. Let's get a bit more vocal."
higher defensive line.
Who was the keeper that you would have
more been? More compact.
Who would have been in goal for Ireland at that point?
Do you know what it might have been? Seamus McDonough. Right. Yeah, because I got to Seamus a little bit after that. Seamus.
Class.
Everybody had a little stint. How did that work, the ball boys? I'm surprised I actually don't know how that came about, to be honest with you.
Well, somebody with access to the archive needs to get busy this afternoon and pluck that out.
I wouldn't have had any contacts. I wouldn't have had any contacts, you know, to kind of, you know, open doors for me back in the day there, agent.
You weren't a member of Wanderers Rugby Club.
No. Now, we could talk about the papers, but let's talk a little bit about Irish football instead. Kenny, Azerbaijan tomorrow night, are we going to get the win?
I don't know.
That's not what we're paying you the big bucks for, Kenny. Get off the fence. We are going to beat them.
Will you pay me car park fee at least around the corner? You do that.
Ashes in receipt.
That's good. Living hope. I would be reasonably confident. I'll be honest. I'm always waiting to see the team. I'm always a bit more confident when I see the team in there before a kickoff, and you get a bit of a picture in terms of how the team's going to set up, and obviously, you know, partnerships around the pitch that can give you a little bit more confidence. And I must admit, the last kind of couple of games, kind of last month, the last three games, probably for the first time, you're beginning to see the bones of a team kind of come together. I'm not talking about necessarily kind of the form of the team, but just in terms of the structure of the team and personnel in particular areas of the pitch, because it wasn't too long ago, maybe 6 months ago, you could have asked me, you know, name three, four Ireland players, absolute certainties to start in the starting 11, and I was struggling. I was actually struggling probably to name three or four players, but last month, albeit we had the disappointment of losing in the manner which we did against Portugal, of course it was a draw against Azerbaijan in the Serbia game, just looking at the team, you're just seeing the sense of the spine of a team coming together, the president, the goalkeeper, obviously Gavin Bazuna, but I think the whole goalkeeping setup there, it's a ray of sunshine at the moment, isn't it, our goalkeepers? It really is. I mean, just when you're beating yourself up a little bit, maybe in terms of results, maybe performances, you look at those three kids coming onto the pitch, and I put Mark Travers in that category as well. I don't think there's been enough talk about Mark over the past couple of months. A lot of talk between about Gavin Bazuna and Quivin for obvious reasons, like two outstanding goalkeepers, but I think Mark for me deserves a huge amount of credit. He came into the team against Serbia that time some time ago, had a bit of a difficult night in Serbia, came out of the team after that, a little bit of criticism maybe unfairly so, but he's kind of got his head down, he's worked hard, he's played pretty much every game for Bournemouth this season, he's in great form. So for me, that trio of goalkeepers we have there now, it's as good as anything. I don't know three better.
We don't have a huge amount of time before the big dog joins us and we get stuck into a live crappy quiz. So I want to ask you about something Dan McDonald is writing about in the Irish Independent this morning, Aaron Connolly, and a player with so much promise, obviously, and flashes of it we've seen, but just sort of not that consistency. But Dan writes, sources have indicated that the jury's out on Connolly with sections of the dressing room, and a general view that he could do better, and maybe a view that, and Dan mentions it in the piece this morning, that his attitude isn't what it needs to be, which is in some ways kind of surprising to read that about a player at that level. What's your sense of what lies ahead now for Aaron Connolly? Because Stephen Kenny's put a lot of faith in him.
Yeah, well, I couldn't speak about the individual to a great extent. I wouldn't know him that well. All I can talk about is where his footballing qualities, what I've seen. So there's clear talent there. You can see that. You see the qualities which he has, kind of dynamic way in which he moves around the pitch. He wants to travel with the ball. He wants to be positive. I think his game understanding has to improve. I think he's almost got to find his position. He's still at that stage where he's trying to find his position. Is it playing wide of a three? Can he play in a two? Can he play as a lone kind of central striker? So I think he has to find that out himself, and hopefully that'll come with experience. I think when he came on to when he played it with Adam Eden Troy Parrott there not too long ago. You could tell there was a bit of a lack of understanding there between the three inexperienced players in terms of how they play together and the kind of understanding between them and their respective positions. So I'm excited about Aaron's presence in the team, but at the moment I'm not exactly sure where he fits in, to be honest with you. So that, hopefully that'll come over time. But like I said before, I think there's a basic structure. It looks as if we settle on that back five, back three, which is a good thing. Shane, John Egan will dominate that. Unfortunately, we've lost Darabba, but Andrew Omo Bamidiele done fantastically well the last couple of games. I think he has to start. So I'll be very confident in that kind of defensive structure with the three. Unfortunately, Seamus won't be there. And then in midfield, for me, has been the biggest area. Josh Cullen, of late, for me, has done really, really impressed last month in difficult circumstances. And Jordan, Jason Knight, I'd have to mention as well. I think he's been a big miss. I mean, in such a short period of time, wouldn't go as far as to say he's become an integral part of the team. But the qualities which he has, for me, is something we're going to have to utilise in the immediate future. I mean, strong argument for me for him coming straight into the team in that kind of central midfield area, particularly if we play with a narrow midfield through a three and maybe a front two up front. I think he's so versatile. You can see him playing in centre midfield in a three, even wide of a front three. He's played at Derby before. He's hugely versatile. And what really struck me was actually the summary when he played against Andorra. He came into the team, he actually played right of a four that day. Stephen played a 4-4-2 against Andorra. Troy got his first international goal, and he played in an area of Troy where I think he's more comfortable as a central striker. I think Troy looks a little bit uncomfortable operating off the sides. To me, he looks like a central striker, likes to operate in a pair. I think potentially him and Adamida down the road, that could be a pairing which could come together. But Jason that day put some crosses into the box. He put a cross in for Daryl Horgan, had to go at the back post. He put a ball in first half, he whipped the ball in, and it was like watching a young David Beckham. The quality was that good. I remember looking at him thinking, wow, this kid's got a little bit of a central midfield wide. He can deliver into box. He can get box to box. Technically good. So, yeah, so I'm seeing now players now. Josh Cullen, Jason, that central midfield there, spoke about at the back. A real kind of structure maybe coming together. Up front, he's got to find maybe a partnership and a trio of players up front who can kind of function together. But
yeah,
it's coming a little bit slower than we would have hoped. But I'm hopeful.
Good man. Optimistic.
One last question on this. Is there any merit in experimenting with Proposal B for a couple of seasons to see how it works?
No.
OTB AM. Live. Weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.